Well, listen, yeah.
No.
So let's take it back a few years when we had Alice James amongst us. And she always used to start the week with Welsh lessons. Any of you remember them? Ah, one or two. I can see hands going up. And Alice always used to start trying to teach us all, not only a few Welsh phrases, but also a Welsh hymn or song during the course of the week. And woe betide us if we miss any of those lessons, because by Tuesday, and that happens to be today, isn't it? We always have to sing that in the concert that we held. Weren't they wonderful concerts? Come on, Walter, we wait for you with pleasure. I didn't know whether to stand up and sing a song for you or whether to read from a note. No. My wife came with me. I don't know where she's gone. She's heard me so many times, she disappears like a flash. And I don't blame her. When I knew that I was coming here, I thought, oh, I'll start and prepare something months before. And over the months, I've tried to have a thought upon this and upon that and the other to do with the school. But regrettably, every time I've really come to thinking about the school and the purpose of it, it's just as though a block has been placed in front of me. And I don't know why, but even last evening, I said to Heather, the one thing I'm determined to do is to sit down for 2 or 3 hours tonight and think out what to talk about in Penarth tomorrow. When we got home, we had the usual succession of telephone calls, and then a gentleman who was opposite to us, his wife had just come out of the hospital after a very serious illness, asked us to go and see her, and then when I was over there, he said, well, you've been so good to us, you must have a drink. And I don't know what on earth he put into that drink, but I can only tell you this, that I couldn't even think afterwards. Now, it could be that the spirit got over me. I don't know. But I just had to go to bed, and I couldn't even get turned with what I'd write or think about. And so it's about, in fact, 11:15 this morning. I really was a bit barren as to all this business about the summer school. And then I suddenly started to write, and I don't know whether sometimes I get a bit of inspiration or whether it's indigestion. But somehow, rains don't cure the one, and they seem to cure the other. But my mind went back over the years, when 40 years ago, when this school started. Now, I didn't come to the first two summer schools, but I think from that point onwards, I was present at so many of the others until the last few years. And I've seen enormous changes in that time. I can look back and there are very few faces that I see amongst you today who were there in those days. Of course, the original idea of the summer school was fostered by Tom Hibbs. And I think it really came out of an idea that he, when he went to Dunbar up in Scotland to a school that was held up there for spiritualists to get together, and then a second one that was held in Llanberis in Snowdonia in Mountain Wales, North Wales, they seemed to come together with such a certain amount of comradeship that he felt something should be followed along the similar lines. And he was most anxious that instead of the static order of people being lectured to and being taught by the hard stick, he wanted something that incorporated both laughter and happiness, since he believed that teaching was best assimilated under those circumstances. I would like to go back for a moment, because my memory is about 11 o'clock or so this morning, took me back to some of these old friends and faces. And I thought I'd write a few down, because some of you may remember a few of them. For instance, there was Tom and Mabel Hibbs, who were the inspirers and the originators of the school. And those of you who knew the original schools could never leave out Alice James or Abby. And Gordon, his son, was involved in latter years. And then in the early days, Joyce Davis and Fred Davis from Newport. Joyce was Tom's secretary in the earlier days before Lily became the secretary of the school and their family. And then Joe Capstack, who was, I dare I say, a hardy annual in the school with Elizabeth, his wife. George Corp and Jesse Corp, they used to sit outside no matter where the schools were held, and he was the treasurer of the school, and he'd spend hours outside making sure that everything was ship-shape. And as the school began to grow, and greater numbers of people made their presence felt, so they gathered around them a great body of folk who included Tom and Winifred Keane, Harry and Sarah Dawson, John and Annie Stewart, and some of you will remember their names, Sam Ingram, Sam Ingram, whose cup is here today, Mr. and Mrs. Reese, I think they're still here, Will and Kate Ford and their daughter Anne, Mrs. Chick, who's always been a hardy annual, I haven't seen her. But I never ever missed Mrs. Chick at the school. John Hopkins and Edna, and even David in his early days. Mr. and Mrs. Richards. Mr. and Mrs. McKindle, who you will see written up in the diary, that he was the past president and the treasurer of the union. And Edwin Phillips, who used to give lectures. And in those early days, when I was looking through the school roll books, I saw appended the last but two in 1948, a name that has become famous, and he was a student at that time, and his name was Gordon Higginson. Medium from Longton, Stoke-on-Trent. That's what he's written in the books. Don't tell him I said that, really, when he's in the front. Ivan Davis and Goethe. Amy and Charlie Tucker, who followed outside by sitting as treasurer and, as it were, dispenser of all good things before. Alex David Leary, Ruby and Tommy Atkins from Nottingham, and a lot of other people who came with us from Nottingham. Little Lillian Nicholson, who used to play the piano, Nick we used to call it, from, where was it, Gillingham, I think. Connie Ransom, Joyce and Alice Spooner, Mr. and Mrs. Walker from Nottingham, always very unobtrusive. You never knew they were there. Emmy Baxton, Effie Baxter, of course. Di and Mar Titley. George and May Hawken. Captain Ernest Gill from Sutton Coldfield. You remember him, won't you? Gilski, he used to call him. Gilski. And that's what he was known by and loved it. John and Florence Davis. Where's John? He's down here on the front row. And his first wife, Florence. Mr. and Mrs. Mark from Coombe, Minnie and Cliff Bridges from up in Evervale there, Don and Vera Harris from Cardiff, Kitty Dooley, she's here today somewhere, Kitty, Mildred Viney, Evan John Powell, that wonderful medium who convinced Arthur Conan Doyle. And I don't know if you ever heard the story, and of course I mustn't tell it this afternoon, but that was the night when Conan Doyle said he would commit murder. You ever known that? And he went out onto the mountains of Dowd's Top and said, tonight I will murder Sherlock Holmes because I'll never write another Holmes story. For what I have seen tonight, I must devote the rest of my life to spiritualism. Such was the mediumship of Evan John Powell in Dowd's. Walter Brooks. You remember him, won't you? And his friends, Cyril and Lillian Ridgway. Oh, and in the book there appeared Eric Hatton and Heather Jeremy. Long before we were married. My sister, Laura Hatton. And Jim and Gladys Foxhall, who were from Starbridge. And I think, honestly, they didn't come to see you folk. They only came to serve in the tea room at the back. They were always up there. Ruby Summers from Swindon, who used to delight us with her beautiful singing. Harold Vigas, wonderful lecturer. Percy Wilson. Winifred Berry. She's here. Oh, I know she's here. But they don't call her Winifred Berry now. Winifred Wilson. And Winifred, whose father was the most august gentleman within the movement years ago. Bertha Harris. Walt Bronfman Ball, and they're here today, Richard Ehrlich, Lord and Lady Down, both came here. And there were two shepherds who often used to collect the sheep, one of them sitting on the platform here, and the others collecting them up above, with his mother. And then there were people who journeyed here from New Zealand, America, Australia, France, Holland, Kenya, India, South Africa, Sweden, Switzerland. Oh my goodness, who we didn't have. I will remember Madame Sinclair saying from France that it was the greatest honour that she had ever had to be present in this school and to talk to the students. Now, she had received the highest award that the French government could give her. And yet she said on this platform that to be present in that very large school that year was the highest honour that she could ever have. Isn't that something? And so it goes on, ladies and gentlemen, but I mustn't bore you with more names. Sufficient to say that there are some of you here now, 11 years, and I see one sitting over on the right who I haven't mentioned, Muriel Harris. And Muriel was here in those early days with many other of her family. Now I see some of you who I haven't included in my names, and the great tragedy is that sometimes when you're trying to illustrate something, mention one and you miss out two. And I would never like to give offence to anyone, but sufficient to say that all of them assembled with myself and others like me because we wanted to learn. In those days, people were recovering from the long, bad struggle of war, its shortages which followed, and the hopes that the whole tone of society would improve because of the lessons we'd all learned, that people would foster better relationships between each other, between nations, and that conflicts would vanish. The United Nations was formed to ensure such things were so. And we saw the passing of several enabling acts, bills within the House of Parliament, not only this country, but other countries, which enabled independence to be given to many nations that were aspiring for self-expression. Those, who you may remember, within the British Empire, as it was known, and in France and Germany and Belgium and Holland, who were all striving for something, for independence, for the freedom and the right of expression. And we also saw, around that period, the triumph of our efforts to get the Witchcraft and the Vagrancy Act repealed. And one gentleman who used to call at every school and was often called up into the front, because we were so proud of him, was John Stuart, because they said that he was like a ghost, that he haunted every courtroom in the House of Commons to solicit from every MP their support for our bill. And that was a great step forward. Our mediums would be able to blaze the trail so that spiritualism's name would be respected and our vital truths acknowledged. Since those heady days, enormous strides have been made in all directions, particularly in the fields of technology, in science, and in medical research. Our homes have become the repository of all kinds of gadgets, which are designed to make our lives easier. The expansion of television has made events and the world, a part of our own little world, wherever we live. We can hardly escape its impact or its fascination. But that it consumes so much of our time and defers us from the other pursuits is conceded by many observers. The hours of dedication for the development of our mental and psychic faculties which the mediums of that day and previous eras had seems no longer to be available to us. We all seem to be chasing each other's tail, and we haven't got the time for this. In consequence, the contact with spirit and spiritual mentors has been to some extent lost, and mental mediumship is now our principal source of contact. In some cases, this form of mediumship is quite excellent, but the mind and its capacities are nowhere near understood as they should be. The powerful energies which can be released and vitalized, the constructive and the destructive ability, is hardly realized. In the realm of self-deception and delusion is rarely acknowledged by those of us who are involved in utilizing those extra senses. But that it is so is a fact. Now, mediumship is the most wonderful revelation given to mankind, but it carries with it an exceedingly heavy responsibility. For not only do people change their lives upon a contact through mediumship, but many of us linger in the arena of psychic revelation, waiting and hoping that every aspect of our lives will be guided by the spirit. And many of us will subscribe to the principle of personal responsibility on the one hand, and yet we surrender it on the other, because we ask for spirit to tell us how to live our lives, what kind of clothes we should wear, and what kind of actions we should conduct our lives within. And yet we say we subscribe to personal responsibility. Therefore, my plea to you here is that you acknowledge on two points: your own responsibility for the conduct of your life, and devote yourself to learning more of your potential, for sensibly expanding your mental consciousness is a mandate that you have had since the day you were born into this world. Some years ago, I had the privilege of talking with Percy Wilson and seeing certain papers. Now, Winifred will probably corroborate this, that his son, Dick, who went across to America and is now amongst the greatest brains in the field of research, the most eminent physicist, attended a conference where people from other parts of the world and other parts of the Iron Curtain were present. And amongst the things that he discussed with a very eminent man who defected to the East, a Dr. Pontecorvo, some of you will know of him and remember him, he forsook the West and took with him atomic secrets. But after those years, when East and West came together to discuss things of mutual interest, his statement to Dick Wilson was along these lines: that the exploration and the greatest challenge of the future was the challenge of psychical research, mental perception, and mediumship. Well, how about that from a scientist who's acknowledged amongst the greatest in the world in recent years? And yet, the movement, as conceived by Emma Harding's Britain and Andrew Jackson Davis, and followed by others through the years, many who were the forerunners of this school and schools like it, were designed and engineered to bring enlightenment as well as consolation For we must not ignore their hopes or their dreams. That was what they had within the background of their thinking. Recent years have seen the opening and the flourishing of many organizations exploring psychic, extrasensory, metaphysical, call them what you like, and spiritual fields. And these, I can tell you, will not be ignored by those in spirit who seek to expand life's continuity through any source that they can find, and they will do so. We are not exclusive, and we should not kid ourselves that we are. The torch was given to us, and regrettably, many of us have failed to keep it alight. We should be like, if I may say so, the flowers and the people who often vie with each other for their essence, but who never begrudge one another the beauty that they expend to those of us who have the ability to smell, touch, and see them. And at the same time, we should realize that in recognizing these other people who are striving for things along similar lines to ourselves, their paths should not knock us off ours. They should not divert us from our principal purpose, nor should we be diverted by those in the field of orthodoxy whose narrow views still regard us, and others who have achieved of life to throw upon the whole vista of human thinking as being bad or misguided or evil. And there are still some today in all kinds of branches of religion, not least in some of the foolish churches that say theirs and only theirs is the way that must be followed. They've always existed, these people, ever since recorded history, and I may tell you, they'll always continue to do so. For no two people see God the same. The great essence, the great light, the great spirit. For as you and I are different people, so are our views different. And these are forever in flux. They are forever changing. And we can never escape that fact. Thank goodness. We must be wary, therefore, of failing ourselves and falling into the trap that many good-intentioned people have fallen into in the past. That of limiting our concept of life in its totality and stifling the establishment of mind with greater mind. For we can never limit that by organization or by my view or any one other individual's view. The challenging words of Emerson I would give to you. God offers to every man the choice between truth and repose. Take which you will. You cannot have both. That's a wise contention if you pause upon it for a moment. For truth is a living reality. And when we start to rigidly organize it, the essence slowly ebbs away. And it has been so with every religion since recorded history. You just look into them and you see what has happened. When they become organized and over-organized, the essence and the essential slip away. You have only to look into the Apostolic Church in Wales to realize this, where the message came through to them, similarly, from the higher center, so they said, of life, and then they tried to organize it and rigidly so order it that nothing, the expansion of different views, was not allowed. And then they started to fall out amongst themselves. And before very long, one split off from another and another and another. And now, the Apostolic Church, which was so strong at one period, is virtually gone. And that's the danger with any movement, not least of which a spiritualist. Leasing once said, "Did the Almighty, holding in his right hand truth, and in his left hand search for truth, offer to me that which I might take? I would in all humility, but with absolute conviction, take search after truth. Because truth can never be static, and our spiritual friends are always telling us this. And I'm not prepared, ladies and gentlemen, to offer over to another person, though he be wise and learned, or to any institution, however ancient or sure of its position, my inalienable right to search for ever-growing and ever-expanding truth. And neither should you, because if you take what that great man of the Finley wrote about, he said, we must always see truth as expanding, never static. It would seem, therefore, that our organization, the one to which I and many of you belong, should be the epitome of spiritual strength, embracing those within its body who seek to establish churches, centers, organizations, but also at the same time aware of their awesome responsibility that it cannot stand still any more than can you or I. I would contend to you, therefore, that we have an enormous yet exciting opportunity to bring a new influence to bear upon the world. I may say, how can I, living up in a valley, or down on the south coast, or up in the Midlands, or up in Doncaster, or any other part of this country, how can I bring such an influence to bear to change the world? And yet, that was the object where spirits' contact was first made and continued to be made and repeated in 1848. Yes, the world has gone through traumatic growth pains in the 40 years that this school has been established. It has changed enormously, and perhaps the greatest change that has ever taken place in a comparable period has taken place in that time. But now the challenge is this: have we changed? Have we? I know some of you perhaps get on a line with me, because though I like the old hymns and I like the old presentation, they haven't changed in the last 60 years, 80, 100 years. And often our thoughts have not changed, and our research has almost been stagnant. What great revelation in the field of research has taken place since the days of Wallace, Oliver Lodge, Conan Doyle, and a host of names like this? Very little. Oh yes, I might sit in my group and my circle, and so may you, and have your contact with those whom you know. But the deep research on a much deeper level, which perhaps has thrown up for us a new ambit of explorations, has not even been conceived or tapped. The harnessing of mental and psychic energies and transforming them into spiritual substance can bring about changes within your life for your good. And by you and I being changed for good, the whole world is changed. That may seem an ambitious statement to make, and yet truth only has to start with one person. The changing of a life can influence another. And like a ball of snow rolling down the hill, it collects to itself more and more and more and more. And so it is with people. I will not quote the man who said it, because many people have said similar things in the ancient books of philosophy and religion. But the truth of it is this: by their works shall ye know. And the purpose that Spirit is constantly telling us to follow is to so order our lives that we have understanding for those with lesser intelligence, not so bright at a certain something that we're good at, not so clever at certain things that we may be proficient in, but to show understanding and patience and tolerance in the realization that even the child that is imbecilic is a flower of the Spirit, and in the years that they are here, something of the spiritual growth is taking place. How much more so then with your neighbor and the person sitting next to you? That must surely be the purpose of Spirit's intervention. By the same process, we can utilize all these enormous potentials which Einstein spoke about, and he reflected upon them, and often had that great mandate. He was exploring along the lines which some of you may have read about in the Philadelphia experiment, which may have gone wrong, but often some of our experiments go wrong. Then I would tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if we can so change the body of our thinking, the sphere of our influence, the power that we excite by these hidden reservoirs that we have within us, then life becomes for us an exciting experience. And instead of a pessimistic drudge, the hopes of Tom Hibbs and Harold Vigors and Percy Wilson and dozens of others who gathered here with them will not be forlorn, then we shall create an atmosphere, not only in this school, but in your homes and in your life, that being a spiritualist will make people pleased and proud to know you. And who knows? Men and women may well say, in 20 or 30 or more years' time, that was a great era when spiritual growth took place. The purpose, as I have always seen it, of this school is to expand people's knowledge, to make people more aware of what they have within them, given by the eternal power, the eternal essence of life, and to utilize it in every degree to the best of their ability. You and I cannot be destroyed. We have these enormous weapons throughout the world, and but for the pressing of a trigger by some foolish one in Moscow or in New York or Washington, but you cannot be destroyed. Emily Bronte wrote this: with wide embracing love, my spirit animates eternal years, pervades and broods above, changes, sustains, dissolves, and rears. Though earth and men were gone, and suns and universes ceased to be, and thou wert left alone, all existence would exist in thee. There is not room for death, nor atom that his might would render void. Thou art being and breath, and what thou art can never be destroyed.
Mediums like Alec, although he wasn't as abused as many others were,
But Helen Duncan and a stack like her, who had this gift to a very great degree of proficiency, dispensed it, dare I say it, before, I nearly said swine, and I will say so. It was given away to people who didn't understand it and who abused it, and the consequence was that many of those mediums were made ill, and instead of the gift being closeted and coveted, a priceless gift, in many cases, it disappeared off the surface of spiritualism, and only one or two places does it exist now in the Western Hemisphere. I'm told that in some parts of the world, it still spontaneously exists and takes place. Albert Best gave us a quotation from this when he met in a witch doctor's hut in daylight, with nobody going in trance, and his wife and children appeared to him, not one, but several. I think it was three children, two or three. Three, you're correcting me. Well, if it can take place only once, if those who are hardened about the Bible, those punchers on it, who say you've got to believe the thing verily, why don't they look at the incident that occurred in the garden with Jesus, or any other incident that occurred, whether you subscribe to the man Jesus or not? No, people put on blinkers. They only see what they want to see, and they hide themselves from the truth. But Einstein didn't. And the tragedy was that there is no recording repeat of such experiments. All experiments, in their initial stages, tend to fail. But of course, when the magnitude is considerable, then it is deemed right and proper that perhaps that experiment should not be repeated. But just as a spirit will manifest herself or himself and move objects through solid walls, why cannot it happen today? When I said to you in the early observations that I had written down, that we have this enormous mental capacity. It's given to everyone. Some who are gifted mediums have it to a slightly greater degree than others, but they are the ones who have chosen to develop it and who have dedicated themselves to so doing. And I conclude by saying this. I spoke with someone a few weeks ago, and I'd better be careful in case you try to pin down where I was a few weeks ago. But someone came to me and said they had been seeing, sensing things, and I turned straight away to what I sense, that they had a considerable mediumistic potential. And they asked me what they should do. And I went along to illustrate, or tried to, how they should devote themselves to meditation, to learn how to perfect their gift, and how to posit it, if you like, with physical mediumship. But if there are certain energies that we can utilize in the evening, and here again, I offer both an encouragement to those of you who have the gift, but also a warning that you should know what the gift is about. Because when you use extra energies that are extra to the normal range of your awareness, you ought really to know what you are doing. In the same way as when you sit in groups, circles, and always when you sit on your own, you should be most cautious. You should know what it's all about. Because you are playing with energies that are enormous and that we can't really comprehend. So, in this particular sense, Einstein was with a number of people, scientists, who were involved in the experiment. It wasn't done by a medium as such, if you look at it. I understand But there is a gentleman in Bristol, and he sends me papers regularly. And I'm not quite sure whether I would go along with all the things he writes. But having said that, I would be wrong to denigrate what he writes. And he states in the recent papers that I've had that certain scientists now have discovered a small unit, a small unit within the atom. Bear in mind how small the atom is, but a small aspect within the atom, which suggests to the scientists that this is the thing that survives forever. And it says to us, on similar lines to our own, that life cannot be destroyed. It is a scientific observation. If they are aware of these things, then they've always been there. In all honesty, folk, there ain't anything new. It's only waiting to be tapped. But the tragedy is, let's face it, that we as a group of people, and I say that as a body of spiritualists now, have had this wonderful truth given to us. And most of us have been contented to let my father or my mother or my auntie or my uncle come back. And that's all very good. And I applaud my mother and my father and my family when they come back. But I don't let it rest there, no more than you should. This whole field that you have of tuning in, of knowing that within you the Spirit exists, and your kinship and your relationship between the Eternal Spirit is something that it only requires you to utilize. No, sir, not one person, a body of people in that sense, but one medium who knows of the power, who has the ability, can make mountains move, no less than they can make sandstones come, move right up into that rostrum without any effort at all. And I'm sure you all know that, don't you? I hope I answered your question.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, I'm very interested in the Russians and their use of the psychic power, because I feel that this is going to be, as your the great power of the future. Could you give us a few thoughts on that and what you think that possibly happening and could normally do?
I don't think there's any doubt about it that all the great nations are not in possession of any information as far as Great Britain is concerned. But I do know from several books that I've read, some papers that I've seen from other sources, and I think without betraying the confidence I could say that Mrs. Wilson will know from her husband's children that experiments along these lines were taking place in America. Years ago. Why should they stop if they found that there's any co-relationship between the things that they're trying to advance? Why should they stop? You see, Spirit has always told us that this power should be harnessed for good. Make no mistake about it. All the folk on the other side, I use this deliberately, but of course they're here, aren't they? They're here now. Spirit is here. It's not up there, it's not below, it's here. And people who interlace themselves into this world are not all goody-goodies. We have the element of both sides of life. But the law that suggests to us that we should track or repel those that are suitable to us is always in operation. Now the Russians are probably utilising it, and some of you may be communists in your political outlook. Arthur Scoggins, not here, but some of you may be along the lines. And I must say that though I'm a businessman, since I came from very humble stock, my life has always been devoted, and my family and my friends, and several of them are here, will tell you, toward helping other people. I make no pretense about that, and I feel very humble in being involved. And our object should always be to encourage the growth of goodness in life, because that's the purpose, the Spirit intervention into this life. But there's no doubt that certain people could harness these forces to the detriment of others. And I do not for a moment doubt that they are being utilized from time to time by those who would choose to use them, not for your benefit or mine, but at the same time I think there are compensating features which probably keep them in balance. I don't wish to frighten you, but I would say to you that I am sure, from what I've read and what I've heard, that these experiments, this knowledge, is known to a very wide spectrum of people. And as the balance is kept between nuclear arsenals on pretty well a level where one knows that if they destroy or shoot off the first, they will equally destroy, whether you agree with it or not, I think that probably the balance of psychic knowledge is on a similar order, where it's held by both. God help us if it should get out of balance in the wrong way. But that's where you and I are concerned, ladies and gentlemen. Because your input, that little bit that you think you can put into life's goodness, has got to be worth something. Every little contribution that we make to the essence of spiritual growth is something that, if you like, is chalked up. And I can tell you that I believe that as a body of people, a spiritualist organization could, if it so were determined, change life so that happiness could reign and that fear could disappear.
Next question.
Gentleman down here.
Hi, Mr. Tata.
Oh, very well. Nice to see you again.
I hope that my question is in order. And what I wish you to tell me, and you inspire us, whether we, or I go to my own ego, whether I can be too sensitive to be a medium. The way I could say this is that in the last 10 years, I lost 8 of my, people. I say lost, they're not lost. When I joined the movement 20 years ago, 7 years ago, I went to Cardiff in Orca Street and I met Elsa Dubagas. Now I lost all my hope, and what I wanted when I joined the spiritual religion was to become a medium. But when I went to Cardiff in Orca Street, Elsa Dubagas, who was in a psychic note and upstairs then, she gave me a message which said, "It's not what you want, my friend, it's what they wish to give you." And I think that healing, I'm sure 2 or 3 people would take healing instead of clairvoyant part. So all I want to know, Mr. Anthony, from you and your friends, I know I'm getting on, but I don't feel old than you. Am I too sensitive to be medium? I take on my mother's condition, I know that, because I love my mother. Can I be too sensitive to work?
First of all, I would say that everybody is a medium. We all sense things. We sense love. We sense the beauty of flowers, that they mean something to us. And we sense music, which conveys something to our mentality and either inspires us or sometimes makes us down mad if we don't like some of the pop music of today. But we all sense. The degree of sensitivity is something that varies enormously. Just as the artist will look at something and is moved to paint, or the writer, such as I read with Emily Bronte and thousands like her, is moved, and sometimes without even looking, to write inspiring words. They are mediumistic, sir. Everyone is mediumistic. But if you ask me upon the level of being aware of spirit, then I would say perhaps not everybody is given to be a seer or a hearer or a sensor. But all of us, whether we see objectively, and by that I mean see things as solidly as you see my hand, whether we see in this objective sense, or whether it is a subjective awareness of things caring for other people, the things that afflict life, the tragedies that affect others. We're mediumistic by virtue of this. But what I would also say to you is this: none of you are too old ever to be involved in life. You may not be able to do what some of the mediums who come up here will do. You may never be able to, but that should never belittle you or inhibit you from being involved in life. And I frequently say to people, because you're 60, and somebody has said, even 55 now, take your redundancy. There's no spot for you again. That's when life's beginning. That's when you're drawn to yourself wisdom. Wisdom that can be expanded on in the years that remain to you in this physical life. There's so many avenues that you can explore. But don't think that mediumship should be restricted merely to seeing or to hearing. There are many ways in which you can utilize it. If it is only for extension and knowing how to extend your thought processes to overcome distance, to wish people well in absentee. You may not be good at laying on hands, but by the very kindness and the thought that you may have within you, you can help to put your contribution to the healing pool of life that will help many. And that is mediumship.
Thank you.
John, and you're still
smiling,
and
then
you sit down.
Now, John's going to get up, I better sit down. My dear friend John.
May I preface my question by saying it's a pleasure to see you again.
And you too.
Well, do you agree that the novices with training for mediumship should be taught the responsibility of mediumship, recognizing that the faculty of mediumship is a sacred trust?
I do, absolutely. And I said this, trying to say it in my lecture. I cannot emphasize enough that when you are aware of things and you sense in a psychic way that an extra dimension to life is around you and about you, and when you start to utilize that, you should know what it's all about. There are many wonderful books written on it. There are many people who can guide. And I would always recommend to anyone that they undertake tuition. Equally, I don't know whether you all agree with this, but it is my contention that no one phase of development can take place without the comparable phase of one's being. We are total, holistic beings. We're made up of many things. And we can never develop our psychic faculties in one direction and leave the other sensitivities dormant. For the gift that lasts, and I've known a few mediums in my time, as you have, John, the gift that lasts is the gift of the psychic that goes hand in hand with spiritual care. And you know, no psychic news reporters here, are there? I don't want to be placed in quite the same category as Gordon Higginson. And he's a very good friend of mine, and we talked about this on Saturday. But some of the mediums who do now perform in large halls, and I'm not saying that that isn't something which attracts many people, because I've chaired one quite recently for Doris Collins, I'm being honest with you. But it isn't the only thing to alert people to one aspect of the greater life. It may not always be the wisest. We must alert people to the fact that life has many facets, many sides to it. And every medium that undertakes development should do so as a conscious effort, realizing the enormous responsibilities that are theirs. In the early part of my lecture, I wrote this morning. that some people's lives can be influenced by a message that they have from a medium. And I've seen dozens and dozens have a dramatic message from their loved ones, and the whole of their life has changed. Now you imagine the responsibility that lies upon any of you if your contact is not absolute. Percy Wilson, I keep mentioning Percy, don't I? But Percy Wilson always used to say this, that when you come off a platform, you should always have a little glucose. And you'll remember, Lily, that we always used to get up and after his lectures and give, all stand up and put a sweet up. Have you got your glucose, your glucose, your glucose? Percy used to laugh. There's a reason behind it. He said that something was taken from the psychic body. In the auric field, something was withdrawn. Now, a lot of mediums are not aware of this. But as much as that, as they give to a recipient in the congregation, they can also, as well as being in contact, and I use a symbol here, as well as being in contact, it has to filter through the processes of their own mentality, and how they relay that is dependent upon the medium. Mental mediumship demands that more than any other phase of mediumship. And consequently, it has that much, much greater area of responsibility that we have to acknowledge. Yes, John. The answer is that would that we could get 40, 30, 20 young, and by that I mean youngish, you're always young when you're 50, really, good mediums who would devote their time to being taught properly, and we have the funds to do it correctly, we could change the whole face of this country. Ah, maybe the world. Because once you harness the power and you know how to use it, there are no barriers. Save your own sense of responsibility.
Thank you.
Mr. Hatton, following what you just said, and bearing in mind that today you can get hundreds and sometimes thousands of people at public meetings about spiritualism, and perhaps only about 35 or 40 on an average on a Sunday night in church, is it not in fact time that the image in church itself was altered so as to track that the service itself, the pattern of the service itself in the churches was radically altered with the object of attracting more people? See, they don't seem, never seems to be a throw off from these public meetings. The church is unpacked the following Sunday or the Sunday after that. No. Seems to make no difference.
No. If you didn't hear the question, Mr. Lewis was saying, bearing in mind what I have just said, that the responsibility that devolves upon mediumship and the fact that sometimes we fail to not only retain large bodies of people who will come to a public meeting, but we fail often to retain them within our churches because of the numbers that come to the services. Isn't it time we change the pattern of the services? Well, he couldn't have given it to a better person than me, because, you know, I put my head in the noose very often. Perhaps you don't know, Mr. Lewis, that I've been trying to advocate this for years. No, I'm not sure what I do is right. In fact, I can tell you that on the way down today, I was playing some music as we were travelling at tremendous speed of a tape that's recently been given to me of different kinds of music. And I'm trying at the moment to get a band up in the Midland, and by that I mean a group, to play some of this so that I can re-record it in a different sense to what it's been recorded elsewhere. None of you, apart from my wife, I think have heard this. But I have some... I better be careful what I say here. But I've had some... something come from Australia, and something come from another part of the world, which I'm trying to use in a similar vein. I've long contended that what was good enough for my father and my grandfather, although they weren't spiritualists, but what was good enough 100 years ago is not really what we ought to be doing today. Our addresses could be good. Some of our demonstrations sometimes are good, sometimes they fall short. But the whole involvement of the congregation should be engendered to give and as well as to take. You see, for the majority of people who are involved in a service, they sit there, and if they don't receive a message, short of singing the hymns, they're not involved, are they? Now, there's so many ways in which we can explore this. I don't know whether I should live to see it change. I really don't. But, in fact, I've got some tapes in my car that I sometimes use now for this type of service, which may not be the ideal, but it's certainly different to what most people have tasted before. The change in our whole pattern is long, long overdue. And when it changes, we may well not only attract, but we may well hold many of the young, as well as the not so young, into our organisation.
I'm sorry, you dematerialised from the stairs before I could ask my question. It's rather a personal one, but a moral question for me. A young man sent to jail for misappropriating funds from our church. And recently I asked someone in the meeting room, could I have the address just a drop of wine for this young man? And I was greeted with cries of horror. Now then, I am not condoning the theft, but as one human being to another, I would just like him to know that it's love. How do you feel about it? You probably know who I'm talking
about. Oh, I know who you are. Many people carry out crimes in society of ours, and perhaps some of the little things that I've done and I've got away with, I might well have been in the same place as he has been. I'm not saying I've done anything like this, but I think that everybody has little dark skeletons in their cupboards. 2 or 3 years ago, I have to be careful and guarded so I don't give too much away. But I was asked about someone who, according to the society in which they lived, may not have been behaving quite as other people would see it. And I repeated this to a lot of people. Really, I brought into this life not by accident. It is a deliberate involvement that we have. And to some extent, I think that we have been involved in making the choice. You may not accept that. But if we are going to live forever, then take it from me, we've always lived. We don't suddenly start as a spirit when we inhabit a body. There has always been some essence of us somewhere. But whether you accept that or not, it behoves us then to recognize that people who conduct their lives in ways different to our own should be treated with compassionately. That's not to say that we should not bring down sometimes the force of our laws which have to protect society, but at the same time there are ways in which they should be adjusted to enable us to be compassionate. Heaven knows, if some of the people who had never had kindness shown to them when they'd gone wrong and had transformed their lives as a result of that kindness, where the world would be and the spirit world today. I well remember a medium when I was very young, much younger than I am today anyway, became involved in the organisation. And the guide that came back, and you may well question the veracity of the guide, but I didn't, because after a time I realised that it was the person who it was claimed to be. But his life had been on this earth not of the best order. But it had changed, and incidents had changed him, and kindnesses that had been shown to him. And here was this man utilising, if you like, the physical body and the voice box of a medium to express that forgiveness and patience and tolerance should never be thrown out of the window, and that we should learn by our mistakes as well as showing that we learn by others' mistakes. And in that sense, we should have courage. Yes. I won't enlarge. I was nearly telling you another story then, but I think that's best left alone.
Any other questions? I didn't realize you had to go to work that early.
Oh, he said, I don't go to work that early. He said, I get up, and the first thing I do, as is my practice, is to bathe and to cleanse my body. And then I sit for a little while and cleanse my mind and do my meditation and give thanks to God. He said, and then I will take some food before I go to work. Now, it was implicit upon him that at 5 o'clock in the morning, whether he got home at 8, 10 or 12 o'clock at night, to get up early and carry out what he thought were his religious obeisance to God. I ask you in all sincerity, how many of us would get up at 5 o'clock every morning and do that? You know, I felt so small and humble that I thought, I sometimes say my prayers or my thoughts at night, my prayerful thoughts. I come to church on a Sunday, and during the day I spare a few minutes, and there was this man following this pattern. His way of appreciating God through music was totally different to mine. The Sikhs who were there were totally different to his. I sat in Jewish bodies of people where they expressed God differently. And how many of us have seen some of the West Indian ladies who jolly about and sing to God and kick their legs? Is God going to accept them any less than he's going to accept my prayers and my hymns? I don't think so. If there is an essence of life that is aware of the black and the yellow and the white and aware of me, then I praise God and thank God that each of them can be appreciated for what they are. The old saying, and never a sparrow falls but what God is aware of it. It may be a bit far-fetched to many of us, ladies and gentlemen, but if the essence of life is in you and I, and it's in the birds that can migrate over thousands of miles, they don't need a compass, they don't need wings as strong as an airplane, but they manage to get there and find their destination, and they manage to get back, and they've only got little bellies to fill. So what is it? It's the energy of life that is within them. So to come back to your question, my dear, it is this. The way that we have tended to express ourselves for our service, and the service that I do, is not irreligious. I give thanks to God in prayer, but I also give it in music. Everything is beautiful in its own way. It doesn't matter whether they have long hair, with their coloured hair, and some of the people that sing that with me are both old and young. I use such songs as this old world is a place worthy of living in. What a wonderful world we live in. I use Kumbaya and things like this. That doesn't denigrate anything to do with God. So why can't we as spiritualists do it? Can I just say this in conclusion, and I mustn't go on too long. We have a lot of young people who come to the church with which we are involved. And some of them have coloured hair. And you know what I'm going to tell you, don't you? Because you've heard me say it before. But their way is different to ours. There's one elderly lady who's just passed away about 6 months, 8 months ago, and these ladies know what I'm talking about, and she had silver hair, as silver and as lovely as could be. And it is my habit, every time I'm at the church, to go around and shake hands with people before the service. It's my habit to go and shake hands with them as they leave, because I want a kinship with them as I hope they do with me. I used to go around, and on this particular evening, I went round to these youngsters who, instead of having blue hair this evening, had streaks of purple, streaks of red, yellow, and all kinds of gay dyes. And I said, hello, Peter, how are you? Great. Hello, John, and something similar. And the girls were saying, there were about 6 or 7 of them this one particular evening. And then I went on the road behind to this elderly lady who was about 81. And I said to her, silver hair, hello Minnie, how are you this evening? She said, bloody colour block. say to May, only in a few days actually, that lady was taken ill. And the first people to inquire about her and send her wishes and wanted to go and see her were those youngsters. We had our church open. And we had some steps built at the back by the builders for people to get up. And they became a little unsteady. We only mentioned it the next day or the day after it was done by them. They didn't come and say, we've done them. Is that all right? Do we do them? They were done. You see, ladies and gentlemen, young people will put on pop music. Some of the pop, I must say, tries me a bit. But let's face it, the music that you and I might love, I'm looking at my sister Mrs. Reese down there, some of the Ivan Novello stuff, some of the John Hansen songs, some of the music of our era, was not altogether liked by our predecessors, was it? My father used to think I was loony when I used to play Bing Crosby. All hours were not sentences. He had used to say I was mad because he loved classics. But you see, it's an idiom, it's a way of expressing ourselves. And some of the music that these youngsters have today isn't bad because it's different. Some of the words are beautiful. Look at this thing that's happened, Live Aid. Now I ask you, would some of us have put ourselves on the line as they did? You see, we have to express ourselves in the idiom of the day. And that's why I think, if I may say so, that perhaps we have to change. I trained in the School of Music, madam, for what it's worth. So I know a bit about the music of ancient and modern and the Methodist hymnal. But I will tell you this. But though I love a lot of that music, I would still like to see a great deal of change. She says, I'm going to give you a short answer. And so I'll tell you what, I'll talk with you afterwards. last weekend, I'll make it brief. Lily, I'll make it brief.
Yes,
last weekend, we had an NEC meeting, National Executive Meeting of the EU. Some of you may know that I'm Vice President of it. Sometimes I have to say a few things. One of the things that Gordon Hughes and I were talking about was that there is very little taking place that shows a change in the movement. Rather than the standards getting better, by and large, they got less. They're lower. Now, that's not saying that there aren't some excellent mediums about it, because there are. But talking about the balance of mediumship throughout the country is not in standards as it was. So, there are ways of experimentation which I think have to be conducted. And there are books that were written. I'm not, at this point in time, going to, as it were, illustrate to you from this platform exactly what you should do. I would like to talk with you about them. But Crookes carried out a number of very good experiments years ago, and I think they were stopped virtually at the point where no one has ever followed them through. See, the Psychical Research Society did certain things, but of course their object was always to denigrate them, always to tear them apart rather than to be constructive. I would love to talk to you about it afterwards, but to give you an answer at this point may take too long, and I don't think I would be in Lily's best books if I continued to do. So, can I just conclude by saying this to you? There are many ways in which we can all follow the truth that we know. Follow the psychic and the spiritual path that we have embarked upon. But it behoves all of us to be considerate toward each other, that there is no one absolute way. There are many ways. And the results will come about
by your personal involvement with them. It's the way you are responding to what you discover, the way you respond to life, that is going to make the spiritualist movement strong, but as much as that, make this a happier life to live in. And your contribution is as vital, nay, more vital today than it's ever been.